And welcome back, everyone, to the Cold War Cast. I am your host, Ryan Llewellyn. This is a podcast where we discuss the history and the pop culture of the Cold War. Today, we're going to talk about a book that I recently read and really enjoyed that I think is a great gem from the Cold War that I think it's worth your time to check out. It's called Masters of Deceit, The Story of Communism in America and How to Fight It. Written in 1958 by the great Cold Warrior, J. Edgar Hoover. I don't think there is another name besides probably Joseph McCarthy that is associated with fighting the Reds in America. So this is really from the horse's mouth, as they say. And I think this book is really cool because it's not academic history. And certainly J. Edgar Hoover talking about communists is going to be a biased source, but it's a real authentic voice from this era. And I definitely think that it fits right in with this podcast mission of telling the story of the Cold War, mainly through the pop culture, because this is a book that was written for lay people, basically, just regular average Americans. Now, on the subject of J. Edgar Hoover himself, we could certainly do a whole podcast about him and telling the story of the Cold War. He definitely deserves a lot more time than we're going to give him. But as far as America facing off against communists, well, he was there from pretty much the very beginning. The guy, he got his start in federal law enforcement in 1917, and he was enforcing the Espionage Act from the War Emergency Division. And basically what he was doing here was going after the Germans. There were a lot of Germans in America, as there still are a lot of people of German descent today. I believe it's still the second largest ethnic group. And you know, some of these people may have had conflicting loyalties. There were concerns about spies and espionage, as the name suggests. So he had his hands full, basically hound-dogging some of these shifty Germans down during this time. Then after the war, the feds turned their attention to a bunch of basically left-wing radicals in America. The communist, the socialist, and the anarchist. And Hoover was right there in the mix and very prominent in the Palmer Raids, which happened in 1919 through 1920, I believe. And basically what this was, a series of raids busting up various communist, socialist, and anarchist groups in America. And again, a lot of these people were foreigners that they were concerned about. The trajectory of his career just kept going upward. And during the Second World War, he was busy looking for spies in America, and ultimately became the head of the FBI when the FBI became a thing. And his career in the FBI, of course, was very long. He's kind of become the archetype of the FBI guy, and kind of like their patron saint and grandfatherly figure, I guess. But, of course, even though his name has some baggage attached to it, that, you know, we'll probably discuss in a different podcast. He's certainly associated with the idea of bending the rules in his mind, in the defense of the American way of life. But, you know, like I said, we'll kind of save that for another episode, maybe. But, getting a little too far in the weeds. But long story short, he was a guy that basically built his career on the idea of America being subverted from these outside hostile forces, namely the communists. And he was right there in the captain's seat, basically, during the deepest, darkest period of America's second Red Scare in the 50s. And he was good enough to leave us fans of the Cold War some writing of his thoughts on the time. And that's what we're going to go into here. Now, the book itself is called Masters of Deceit, The Story of Communism in America and How to Fight It. I was kind of neutral on the book going into it. I didn't expect it to be terribly exciting. Didn't expect it to be too bad either. But I was really quite surprised with it and found it actually a very well-written book, especially from historical hindsight when you can look back and really see what the guy was trying to do. This is a very effective example of persuasive writing, I think. He wrote in a way that I feel would really resonate with a lot of people. And what I mean by that is I didn't feel that he was writing to show us how smart he was. He chose very, very blunt and direct language. Like, at no point did you not understand where he was going with this. And I wish I would have saved a few quotes just to really highlight these examples, but it's just very simple writing. And if any of you have ever really studied writing and how when they talk about simplicity is best, a lot of times people try to be a little too verbose and flowery with their language and doesn't work out all the time. J. Edgar Hoover, he just the facts, man, just kind of like what you'd associate with an FBI guy. So I thought that was really cool and just something to note right there. But now the book was written for, I suppose, primarily Americans that would be concerned about communism within the United States, which was probably a good portion of the United States at the time, of course. And it was also written to dissuade people who were leaning towards communism. And one thing that I think that he did in this book that was really very, very masterful and effective as far as persuasion goes was he didn't try to confront the ideas of communism head on. You know, he didn't try to make arguments that free markets were better or this or that. He came at communism from the side, basically. So in a nutshell, what he was saying to a lot of these people that would be communist or considering becoming communist was that he understood why they would want to do that. That, you know, maybe they genuinely have a good heart and want to see reforms in society. But if you do, well, it's not that your ideas are wrong. It's just that, well, life in the Communist Party of the United States really sucks. And it's run by a bunch of dysfunctional people. That was his primary argument. He gives some really good examples of infighting within the Communist Party and different splinter groups, you know, denouncing of other members over what seems like little silly doctrinal issues. And it really resonates with the political climate of today or, you know, recently, and the idea of purity spiraling, where, you know, you might have people that hold certain ideas and within a little bit of an echo chamber, they kind of keep going one way and eventually they try to one-up each other. And so it really sounds like the communist world, as he saw it, was really heading that way, where it was getting kind of petty with a lot of people. He talked about how if you became a member of the Communist Party, you would be expected to go to a whole bunch of silly little discussion meetings. You would have to basically do little errands for the party all the time. You would be hectored about making donations a lot. They would try to skim a lot of money out of you in the way of dues, and also pushing the pamphlets that they would make, the literature that they would print and sell. You would just be really nickeled and dimed to death. It would eat up a lot of your free time. And they also pointed out how many marriages would fail because one party was a communist member, and things would go south at home because, you know, you would be working all day, and then the party would pretty much demand out of you a lot of your free time. And at times, the Communist Party would also order you to denounce your spouse over, you know, this or that issue. So they brought up a lot of cases of that. Really, reading about life in the Communist Party, and, you know, to be honest, he probably picked out some of the more egregious cases and, you know, whatever. But it really sounded like an exhausting affair for very little payout. So I think it was effective that he didn't say your ideas are wrong. It's just basically you're going to have a really bad time if you do this. Also, early in the book, he gives a history of communism, which of course is very slanted. And he talks about Marx and Lenin and Stalin and their shortcomings. You know, Marx was a dysfunctional slob. Lenin was hardly even really Russian. I think that was the angle he took with it. And Stalin was a opportunist sociopath. And it was written in a way, and, you know, like I said, of course, his take is going to be one you'd take with a grain of salt because of his biases. But it was written in a way that basically, if you side with the communists, you're going to be on the losing side here. Like, yeah, it seems like it could be a glamorous thing to be a revolutionary, but, you know, these people aren't who they're cracked out to be. Now, I think the most important part of the book, insofar as understanding the Red Scare, looking back on it, is the parts where he talks about the idea of the communists using the fellow travelers or the United Front as a way to advance their agenda. And what's meant by this is a sense of incrementalism, or I guess the domino effect, the domino theory of the mind, where they would find some group or people that they would have somewhat of a common ground with and establish that common ground and then slowly creep their way in. So this was something that would happen a lot, or said to happen a lot, with labor unions. Well, they could start off with, you know, demanding fair wages and work conditions, and, you know, people would be nodding along with them. And once they develop or figure out another chink in the armor, they can kind of keep pushing their agenda from there. They can gain credibility with these groups and use their numbers to maybe attach their own issues to. So an example that he uses besides labor unions was, I believe, like a mother's group or something that signed a petition for peace in the world. Well, it's like, you know, who is against peace, you know? But really the wording of the petition was basically to not be so hostile to the Soviet Union. So the communists are in the United States are pushing their agenda that way. And he describes them as being something of a Trojan horse in American society and being intentionally deceptive and oftentimes operating underground or, you know, maybe not necessarily completely underground, but operating discreetly, where somebody would be a communist and working for the Communist Party and taking orders from Moscow, but wouldn't openly identify themselves as a communist. Maybe they would just say they're just kind of a run-of-the-mill liberal and able to not have the stigma of being a communist, but find these little ways they can work their agenda in. So what this means is that there would have been a good possibility that anything that gets out of the line of God, Mom, and apple pie back during that period in the 50s, well, could be the work of the communist. So you can understand how there was so much paranoia and fear in the era. You know, another example he used is the civil rights movement, which was gaining steam at this time, and how that was an easy one for the communists to latch on to. So certainly there were people back then that would take advantage of this ambiguity. And, you know, maybe if they didn't like the civil rights movement, would kind of ham up the possibility that there were communists behind it, or, you know, disagreed with this or that, you know, maybe blew the idea that communists could be part of it out of proportion. But also good-natured people, reasonable people, were given the seeds of doubt for just damn near everything in society. You could make a connection that maybe there's communists behind everything. So we kind of look back on the Red Scare now and laugh. But at the time, it probably wasn't that funny. There was probably a real genuine concern, you know, maybe not at the forefront of everyone's mind of, you know, just the average person on the street. But in society as a whole, there were just seeds of doubt about anything, about everything, just because of the possibility of communist infiltration. And I think reading something like this book, and this book, it's a very easy read. Like I said, his language is very direct and engaging, and not terribly lengthy. It's worth your time. You can get the Kindle version on Amazon for like $5 or something. But I think reading something like this is valuable to really understanding the Red Scare during the Cold War in the United States, and also the idea that by the end of the Cold War, you know, the final days of the Cold War, the 80s, well, the people that were in charge really cut their teeth on this kind of stuff. And, you know, this period really shaped American society for a long time, even after the Cold War. And I think there's, well, no other better person to really get this kind of these kind of words from other than J. Edgar Hoover himself. Now, Mr. Hoover spends a lot of the book dissuading people against joining the Communist Party and scaring people, you know, who aren't communists, but just concerned about communism from, you know, communism gaining a foothold in America. And he leaves us, the reader, with a few actionable tips to stop the spread of communism in America. All right, so number one, rally the majority non-communist strength. So what he means by that is understand that the communists, even though they've got a lot of weight for their small numbers, they still are very small numbers in the United States. And always side against the communist. And just remember that good God-fearing Americans of both political parties, all other political persuasions and religions and races and creeds and so forth, are against communism, or, you know, should be at least, and, you know, side with your fellow Americans. Number two, understand that communism is always evil and is never a temporary good. So what he means by that is these guys, they, like we're talking about, they try to slime their way into American society, and at times they might latch on to some good ideas, but they're always up to no good, and everything they've done leads to no good. That was pretty much the argument that he made. Number three, don't underestimate the communists. Now, he spends a lot of the book kind of talking about how some of these people are charlatans and not cracked up to be the great people that they make themselves out to be in the communist world. But don't underestimate them. They can get into the highest positions in the American government and society, and they've got a mission, and they're going to try to carry it out. So no sleeping at the wheel, America. Number four, learn their tactics. And that's what you're doing by reading his book. And this is just so you can understand how they work. So, you know, if a guy starts, you know, if you're back in the 50s and a guy starts talking to you about how atomic bombs are a bad idea, you could say, you know, shut the hell up, commie, I'm on to you. Once you understand the dirty commie and how their tricks work, well, they're not going to work anymore. Number five, be counted. What he means by that is don't be afraid to stand up, stand tall, and speak out against communism. Even though he points out examples of people who have spoken out against communism and end up getting their lives ruined by vindictive communists, you just have to be brave and speak your mind to these people and keep speaking the truth. Sound advice. It probably wasn't too controversial to say communism was bad in 1958, but either way, you gotta counter their lies where you can. Now, number six is kind of funny considering the source. You know, we talked about how J. Edgar Hoover has a bit of a dirty reputation, but always fight the communists in a democratic manner. Don't violate people's civil liberties. Don't break the law. Don't do anything un-American, because if that's the case, well, then we're just as bad as the communists. And, you know, that is interesting, because that is a real strong theme that you find looking at pop culture works of the Red Scare period, where at times the being vigilant or fighting communism was said to have brought out the worst in our society. And, you know, it's not just with communism. I think that's happened with some other things and continues to happen in our society sometimes. So that's something that you have to watch out for. Kind of like Nietzsche said, when you stare into the abyss stares back at you. So, you know, just always remain principled in the fight against communism, and don't stoop to their level or anyone else's levels. Maintain your own high standards. All right, I think I'm going to leave that there. Again, I really recommend you pick up this book, Masters of Deceit by J. Edgar Hoover, and give it a good looking over. Some of it, like I kind of hinted to, seems evergreen in modern society. So it's not completely irrelevant anymore, I think. But it is interesting. And like I said, it's just the absolutely perfect voice to listen to if you want to understand that era and the way some people were thinking, or at least being guided to think by, well, one of the premier cold warriors of the day. All right. So if you want to support this podcast, the best way to do it is, if you want to support it financially, that is go to reddragonherbs.net and get yourself some tea. that's our family business, and we've been kind of chugging along. It's been very busy with that lately, and see what we have. This makes a really good gift. A few bags of tea put in a gift basket. A lot of people are pretty happy about that. We have some pretty interesting things, some kind of helpful herbal blends. And as always, if you need any recommendations, I'd be glad to help you. The best way to get in touch with me is either hit me up on Twitter or Instagram. And, if you do read this book and you have any thoughts, let me know what you think. I always appreciate that. And this show could use some reviews on whatever platform you're listening to this on. So I always appreciate feedback. It's always great to hear from you guys. I really appreciate it. And I will be back very soon with a new episode. Thanks for listening.